There is no place in America for this kind of violence, or any violence for that matter. An assassination attempt is contrary to everything we stand for as a nation, everything. It's not who we are as a nation. It's not America. And we cannot allow this to happen. We must unite as one nation. We must unite as one nation to demonstrate who we are.
Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles. This is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake, California. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internet. So the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. I have been warning y'all for some time now on this program to buckle up, that it was going to be a very bumpy ride between now and Election Day on November 5th and beyond, by the way. All of this is unlikely to be over as of election night, no matter who is ultimately named the winner on November 5th. So I've warned that fighting to save our electoral democracy and to protect our constitutional representative republic from the specter of rising authoritarianism was never going to be easy, was not going to be a smooth ride. I hope you heeded my warnings. And as bumpy as things have gotten of late, there are almost certainly many more bumps in the road to come. I hate to break it to you, but I thought I should. You got that, Desi Doyen?
Yes. Yes, I do. And boy, it's bumpy now.
You
can't
are well,
wait to see what happens.
Oh, I can wait. You are well buckled in, I'm hoping, as the, what's the old Chinese curse? May you live in interesting times.
In interesting times, yes.
Well, these are interesting times. Now, in normal times, the attempted assassination of a, well, at the time, a presumptive presidential nominee, now the actual presidential nominee, for one of the two major parties would be our lead, of course, and likely our only story to focus on today. And we will focus on that story, and we will open the phones if time allows at this point. I hope it does, but no promises. At 818-985-5735 to discuss that and all of the other related news surrounding it today. And the story that will be taking the lead position here today is not even the fact that the Republican Party, on the very first day of their national convention in Milwaukee on Monday, officially nominated the twice convicted, four-time criminally indicted, 34 times so far criminally convicted, and adjudicated rapist Donald J. Trump as their presidential nominee in 2024. Yes, that is now official. Nor is the story, our lead story, that he has officially named former Trump critic turned Trump loyalist toady, Senator J.D. Vance of Ohio, as his vice presidential candidate. Vance had previously said that Trump was, Vance said that he was a, quote, never Trump guy. He said he, quote, never liked him, that he, quote, can't stomach Trump. He thinks he's, quote, noxious and is, quote, reprehensible and, quote, an idiot. He compared him to Hitler and said that he's leading the white working class to a very dark place. For that, he has been awarded the nomination for vice president in the Republican Party. We'll get into details of that, no doubt, on another day. But while the attempted assassination of a presidential candidate, much less a former president, much less on the eve of his party's national convention and his nomination this week, well, all of that should be our lead story, but it has all been superseded, at least for a few moments here at the top of the show, for yet another story that I think the timing of which, coming just 48 hours after the attempted assassination and just a few hours before the beginning of the Republican National Convention, I think it can hardly be considered coincidental at this point, especially from this particular judge at this particular time. But the Donald Trump-appointed U.S. District Judge Eileen Cannon, down in the Southern District of Florida on Monday, dismissed the federal indictment against the former president on 40 criminal counts related to his theft of highly classified national security documents upon leaving office and his refusal to return them to the government when he was repeatedly asked and, in fact, subpoenaed. The ruling by Trump's lifetime appointee to the federal bench, Judge Cannon, comes just days after the corrupted Trump-appointed majority on the U.S. Supreme Court in a separate federal indictment against the former president defied the clear intentions of the framer of the Constitution and the text of the Constitution itself to find that sitting presidents have near absolute immunity for crimes committed while serving in office, you know, like a king. Judge Cannon's 93-page ruling on Monday in federal court in Florida, finding that special counsel Jack Smith was improperly appointed to the role of special counsel, is yet another legal victory, at least for now, for Donald Trump, even if it is eventually reversed on appeal. And in fact, Jack Smith has announced just moments before airtime that they will, in fact, be appealing. Trump's lawyers have attempted this long-shot argument after long-shot argument to dismiss the case before this gambit, this one, finally succeeded, far beyond expectations. Other courts, multiple courts over many years, have rejected arguments very similar to the one that Trump's team made in Florida about the legality of Jack Smith's appointment, but this judge went for it. As the Washington Post reported a bit earlier, the DOJ is likely to appeal the decision. In fact, that has now been done, and the issue may eventually reach the Supreme Court, where the corrupt Justice Clarence Thomas, in a lone concurring opinion in which none of his fellow justices signed on, recently made the argument that Cannon approved in her ruling today. Even though the case at the Supreme Court that he was issuing his opinion in regarding Trump's indictment related to the attempt to steal the 2020 election did not even raise the question about the appointment of special counsel Jack Smith, Clarence Thomas just decided he wanted to give his opinion on the matter. And by dismissing that entire indictment of thousands of pages of stolen national security documents, in dismissing that indictment on Monday, Cannon also dismissed the charges for Trump's two co-defendants in that case, Walt Nauta and Carlos de Oliveira. On social media, Trump said Monday's dismissal, quote, should be the first step, and that the rest of the criminal and civil cases against him also should be tossed out of court. He accused Democrats of conspiring against him to bring those cases, despite the lack of evidence for that claim. But since when has a lack of evidence ever prevented Donald Trump from claiming anything Donald Trump feels like claiming, whether it's true or not? Usually not. Trump attorneys have reportedly long considered the classified documents case in Florida to be the strongest of the four criminal cases against him, in part because the acts in question mostly occurred after he left the White House, so he can't claim quite as easily anyway that he's immune because he's president. And it was the case that most worried them, at least according to the Washington Post. The former president was charged with 40 counts of illegally retaining classified national defense information and obstructing government efforts to retrieve that material in apparent strict violation of the Espionage Act. Some of the documents found in an FBI search of Mar-a-Lago were highly classified information about top-secret U.S. operations so closely guarded that many national security officials are kept in the dark about them. And yet Donald Trump felt they were his. He could leave the White House with them. He could keep them. He could hide them from the government, which he did. He could try to destroy evidence showing him hiding them from the government. He could tamper with witnesses and order them to lie about the theft of these documents. Cannon's opinion on Monday delves into the legal minutiae of special counsel regulations and does not address the actual crimes that Trump and his co-defendants are accused of committing, or the merits of the evidence that prosecutors have assiduously collected. Cannon, who was actually nominated and seated to the federal bench after Donald Trump had lost the 2020 presidential election and just days before President Biden would be sworn into office, she wrote in her ruling that the issue of a special counsel was a novel one that had to be decided before the prosecution could proceed any further. Quote, upon careful study of the foundational challenges raised in the motion, the court is convinced that Special Counsel Smith's prosecution of this action breaches two structural cornerstones of our constitutional scheme, the role of Congress in the appointment of constitutional officers and the role of Congress in authorizing expenditures by law. Cannon found that the Justice Department has inconsistently appointed special counsels and said the lack of consistency makes it near impossible to draw any meaningful conclusions about Congress's approval of modern special counsels like Special Counsel Smith. The legal theory that Smith was illegally appointed and funded has generally been considered, well, far-fetched to say the least, particularly given the recent history of special counsel appointments, including that of former FBI Director Robert Mueller back in 2017 during the Trump administration, by the Trump administration, to investigate any possible ties between the Trump presidential campaign and Russian election interference efforts back in 2016. The Mueller appointment was also challenged in court. However, two district court judges and an appeals court panel upheld it as fully legitimate and completely constitutional, but not Judge Cannon. Trump appointed federal judges in the federal tax and firearms cases against President Joe Biden's son, Hunter. They also dismissed similar arguments several months ago in those cases, one of which resulted in the conviction of the president's son. If the dismissal of the case against Trump stands up to appellate scrutiny, well, then the cases against Hunter Biden brought by a special counsel would seem to be dismissed as well. They would have to be. Also, the case brought by Jack Smith against Donald Trump related to his multiple failed attempts to steal the 2020 election in D.C., well, that would eventually also have to be dismissed if the Supreme Court ultimately upholds Judge Cannon's stunning ruling on Monday. Her legal argument gained more steam this month after Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas wrote in the presidential immunity case that the special counsel's office needs to be established by Congress and that Smith needed to be confirmed by the Senate. He was the only one to say that. None of his other colleagues signed on to it. And the case in question didn't even bring it up. Clarence just thought he wanted to send the message down to Florida, down to Judge Cannon.
Message received.
The crux of the argument is that because Garland has repeatedly said Smith is acting independently in overseeing the investigation, that the special counsel should be considered a, quote, principal officer, a top government official who has no immediate supervisor and whose appointment, therefore, requires Senate approval. It's a ridiculous argument, in fact. The special counsel team countered it, noting that Smith, like many other special counsels before him, going back many, many years, is not a principal officer. His team, the prosecution team, said that while federal regulations say Attorney General Merrick Garland does not provide day-to-day supervision of special counsels, the AG ensures that they adhere to Justice Department protocols and can review major investigatory steps. That, of course, was made very clear, as you will recall, when Bill Barr, then Donald Trump's Attorney General, essentially gutted the eventual final report from Special Counsel Robert Mueller in the Russia investigation before it was ever released to the public. So obviously, someone is overseeing the special counsels. I will say, for the moment, that what all of this amounts to is one single corrupted federal judge ruling in favor of a long ago and many times rejected argument, largely from right-wingers, about the idea of appointing independent special counsels or prosecutors. Were it not for Clarence Thomas's recently issued opinion, signed again by nobody else, not even Sam Alito, who will go along with any kind of wingnut lie. Even he wouldn't sign on to this, on this corrupted high court. Were it not for Clarence Thomas in a case that had nothing to do with challenging the legitimacy of Jack Smith's appointment, there would be no federal judges who concurred with the neophyte Trump-appointed Judge Cannon. Now, the upside here, if there can be one, is that after months of Cannon hearing motion after motion from the Trump defense team that most judges would have dismissed out of hand without even holding a hearing on, and her refusal to actually rule on most of those motions, which prevented Jack Smith from seeking an appeal and the potential to remove Judge Cannon from this case, well, now there is finally an appealable ruling, and I would be shocked if he didn't also seek the judge's removal from this case as well when he makes his appeal. Having postponed the trial indefinitely several weeks ago, maybe months ago at this point, Cannon ensured that arguably the most serious breach of national security information potentially in the history of our nation will not come before trial before Donald Trump is up for re-election again in November. That was already the horse had left the barn already. So whatever delays may now happen, well, they're unlikely to affect any of that in a case where the trial was already delayed beyond Election Day by this Trump-friendly judge, despite the very simple facts of this case and the mountain of evidence in it. So if you've got any thoughts on that, you're welcome to try to get in line to share them with us today, 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-KPFK. But then there's the other huge story of the day and of the weekend and perhaps of the entire election cycle. We shall see. Let's start here. As the Philly Inquirer reported on Sunday night, some 24 hours after the attempted assassination of Donald Trump near the beginning of his campaign rally in Butler, Pennsylvania, in the very Republican western part of the state of Pennsylvania on Saturday, the body of the apparent shooter, 20-year-old Thomas Matthew Crooks, was found on the rooftop of an agricultural tool manufacturing plant a few hundred feet from the rally venue, with an AR-style semi-automatic rifle legally purchased by his father laying near his lifeless body after he had been, quote, neutralized by law enforcement officials following at least five shots that were fired at the former president. Crooks, the shooter, was wearing a T-shirt promoting the Demolition Ranch, a YouTube channel for gun enthusiasts, which apparently Crooks was, according to reports of his limited social media presence. Turns out he was a gun enthusiast. He was also, according to officials, a registered Republican. Let me repeat that. According to officials, he was the guy who tried to kill Donald Trump, a registered Republican. At 20 years old, he would only have registered to vote in presumably 2022 during the Biden presidency when he turned 18. And while he doesn't appear to have a long social media trail to analyze, much less some sort of a manifesto or explanation for what he attempted to do on Saturday when he came literally within a hair of shooting Donald Trump in the head while managing to kill at least one rally goer and critically injuring two others, media have attempted to piece together a picture of who this guy Crooks was and what his motivation could possibly have been. Regarded by many of his former high school classmates as a bit of a quiet loner, some of whom reported that he had been bullied at times, Mark Sigafoos, I think, according to the Inquirer, remembered Crooks as the quiet but friendly kid that he shared two classes with at Bethel Park High. Sigafoos remembered Crooks as the quiet but friendly kid, saying, quote, he was very kind. He was a nerdy kid, but I don't think he was as harshly bullied as some people are saying. Sigafoos did not recall Crooks making political overtures in class, but rather as someone interested in how government works and, quote, not trying to insert his own beliefs into it. But another former classmate did not share that view. Max Smith recalled an American history course with Crooks as a sophomore, and he recalled Crooks making political statements. Quote, he was definitely a conservative, said Smith. It makes me wonder why he would carry out an assassination attempt on the conservative candidate. Smith recalled a mock debate in which their history professor posed government policy questions and asked students to stand on one side of the classroom or to the other to signal their support or opposition for a given proposal. Quote, the majority of the class was on the liberal side, but Tom Crooks, the alleged shooter here, no matter what, he always stood his ground on the conservative side of the room, said Smith. That's still the picture I have of him, just standing alone on one side while the rest of the class was on the other. So the current information that we have as of now, as we go to air, and if you have additional information from reputable sources, you can feel free to call in at 818-985-5735. But the current information is that Crooks was a registered Republican and, given his age, a recently registered Republican. He was only 20. Can't vote until you're 18. Some reporting has suggested that he gave a single $15 donation to a progressive voter turnout group on Inauguration Day in 2021 when he was 17, and then registered as a Republican when he turned 18 the following year. And that's almost all that we know. And even that first part, that supposed donation of $15 to some progressive get-out-the-vote group, well, that's been challenged by some who suggest that the donation came from a different Thomas Crooks in Pennsylvania, in fact. Nobody, however, has challenged the fact that he was a registered Republican, even if many Republicans since that was confirmed over the weekend, have conveniently forgotten to mention that part when obnoxiously and dangerously blaming Democrats for the shooting that took place on Saturday, which appears to be more of a school-style mass shooting by this kid than necessarily an act of political violence, though obviously it was such an act, no matter how it was intended. Crooks' one political affiliation, other than his party registration, appears to have been his membership in a local gun club. As TPM's Josh Marshall notes, there's recent sociological research focused actually on precisely that part of the country in western Pennsylvania, in Harrisburg specifically, that discusses the way these gun clubs there have transformed over the last 10 to 15 years into hard right conservative milieus. When Crooks was killed by Secret Service snipers, he was wearing a T-shirt from the Demolition Ranch, the firearms YouTube channel, which has the lead guy shooting a lot of things with high-powered rifles. His other interests appear to be chess, video games, and learning to write computer code. That is literally, at this hour anyway, about all that we have on the shooter. The reaction to him and to the shooting, however, that has been a very different matter since Saturday. Now, what happened on Saturday was nothing short of disgusting and shameful. And I am glad, and I think we are all very lucky that the outcome was not worse. No matter what you may think of Donald Trump, I can't even imagine what today would look like right now on the first day of the Republican National Convention, where he was and now still is actually officially nominated as the Republican candidate for president. I can't imagine what today would be like had Donald Trump been killed on Saturday. We would all be living in a very, very different world today. So if you think things are getting kind of scary right now, I don't even want to think where we would be had Donald Trump been assassinated. And though we don't yet know the full circumstances of whatever occurred, it is appalling that a would-be assassin was able to obtain what appears to have been a long-range semi-automatic rifle with which so many rounds could be fired in a matter of seconds and with such deadly precision at such a distance from outside the venue's perimeter, from about 150 yards away from where the former president was speaking. That type of weapon is a weapon of war. So it should come as little surprise then that they're now regularly being used in such a fashion in what many regard as a political war, at least many on the right. In this case, by a registered Republican, after Republicans have spent years to help ensure that someone like that shooter would have easy access to such deadly weapons. Weapons that get used in exactly this way, and by the way, for absolutely nothing else. In the meantime, the political violence has been fostered by this former president and his party. The violence that we have seen play out in too many incidents in recent years, it must end. The assassination attempt on Trump reveals America at its shameful worst. Despite his disgusting, repeated mocking of a similarly grotesque attempt to assassinate the husband of Nancy Pelosi back in October of 22, which has been repeatedly treated as a joke, literally, by Donald Trump and his supporters, a big laugh line at his rallies. Hysterical. That some guy broke into Nancy Pelosi's house in the middle of the night and smashed in the skull of her husband. That's hilarious. Despite Donald Trump and his supporters and their idiocy, there's nothing amusing about what happened on Saturday, and we must all condemn that behavior, no matter who carries it out and no matter who the victim or the attempted victim may be. We must also continue to speak the truth, however, peacefully but clearly. We must not allow this incident to be used as, well, by opportunists as an attempt to chill accurate, fact-based political speech at one of the most critical moments in American history. And that is exactly how it has been used by quite a few Republicans since Saturday's tragic event, to try to chill free speech. And I'll try to get to some of those remarks in a moment. But after President Biden called on Americans to, quote, unite as one nation during brief remarks on Sunday afternoon, he offered a slightly longer statement live from the Oval Office on Sunday evening, condemning political violence, calling for the nation to unite in peaceful and vigorous political speech and political action, but at the voting booth. Here's a few minutes from that statement from Biden on Sunday.
My fellow Americans, I want to speak to you tonight about the need for us to lower the temperature in our politics. And to remember, while we may disagree, we are not enemies. We're neighbors. We're friends, co-workers, citizens, and most importantly, we are fellow Americans. We must stand together. Yesterday's shooting at Donald Trump's rally in Pennsylvania calls on all of us to take a step back. Take stock of where we are, how we go forward from here. We cannot, we must not go down this road in America. We've traveled before throughout our history. Violence has never been the answer, whether it's with members of Congress of both parties being targeted and shot, or a violent mob attacking the Capitol on January 6th, or a brutal attack on the spouse of former Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, or information and intimidation on election officials, or the kidnapping plot against the sitting governor, or an attempted assassination on Donald Trump. There is no place in America for this kind of violence, for any violence ever. Period. No exceptions. We can't allow this violence to be normalized. You know, the political record in this country has gotten very heated. It's time to cool it down. We all have a responsibility to do that. Yes, we have deeply felt strong disagreements. The stakes in this election are enormously high. I've said it many times that the choice in the selection we make in this election is going to shape the future of America and the world for decades to come. But politics must never be a literal battlefield, and God forbid, a killing field. All of us now face the time of testing as the election approaches. And the higher the stakes, the more fervent the passions become. This places an added burden on each of us to ensure that no matter how strong our convictions, we must never descend into violence. I'll continue to speak out strongly for our democracy, stand up for our Constitution and the rule of law, to call for action at the ballot box, no violence on our streets. That's how democracy should work. We resolve our differences at the ballot box, not with bullets. The power to change America should always rest in the hands of the people, not in the hands of a would-be assassin. Hate must have no safe harbor. Let's remember, here in America, while unity is the most elusive of all goals right now, nothing is more important for us now than standing together. We can do this. We owe that to those who come before us, to those who gave their lives for this country. We owe that to ourselves. We owe it to our children and our grandchildren. Look, let's never lose sight of who we are. Let's remember we are the United States of America. There is nothing, nothing, nothing beyond our capacity when we do it together. God bless you all. May God protect our troops.
That was President Biden on Sunday addressing the American people from the Oval Office. In other comments from folks on the left following the assassination attempt on Saturday, Attorney General Merrick Garland told reporters that the DOJ has, quote, no tolerance for such violence, and as Americans, we must have no tolerance for it. This must stop, he said. Former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said, quote, as one whose family has been the victim of political violence, I know firsthand that political violence of any kind has no place in our society. I thank God that former President Trump is safe, said the Speaker Emerita. Former President Barack Obama wrote on Twitter, quote, there is absolutely no place for political violence in our democracy. We should all be relieved that former President Trump wasn't seriously hurt and use this moment to recommit ourselves to civility and respect in our politics. Quote, this is a moment where all leaders have a responsibility to speak and act with moral clarity, said Pennsylvania's Democratic Governor Josh Shapiro. Where all leaders need to take down the temperature and rise above the hateful rhetoric. He added his prayers for those injured, including Trump and the family of Corey Comparator, the spectator at the rally who was killed, noting, quote, we need to make sure Corey's memory is forever a blessing. Political, quote, political violence is absolutely unacceptable, said Senator Bernie Sanders, the Vermont Independent, on Twitter on Saturday. Quote, I wish Donald Trump and anyone else who may have been hurt a speedy recovery, said Sanders. In an appearance on NBC, he noted an incident earlier this year where a man tried to burn down his office in Burlington, Vermont, while staff members were inside. Congresswoman Mary Peltola, Alaska's Democratic congressional member, said, quote, this is an assassination attempt, plain and simple. America is better than this. My thoughts are with President Trump and his family and all at the rally, she said. But is America better than this? Are we? If you noted the comments coming from the Republican right, it sure does not seem like it. Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina said, quote, this was an assassination attempt aided and abetted by the radical left and the corporate media. So the radical left and the corporate media, I guess, they aided and abetted the assassination by a registered Republican with a weapon that the left has been trying to see banned for years, but has been stopped at every turn by Republicans? Really, Senator? Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, who has proudly and repeatedly fired AR-15-style rifles from sniper perches in her campaign ads, she wrote, quote, "Democrats wanted this to happen. They've wanted Trump gone for years, and they're prepared to do anything to make that happen." She also said, quote, "May God have mercy on our enemies because we won't." On Sunday afternoon, so after a full day after the shooting, Marjorie Taylor Greene tweeted, quote, "We are in a battle between good and evil. The Democrats are the party of pedophiles, murdering the innocent unborn, violence, and bloody, meaningless, endless wars. They want to lock up their political opponents and terrorize innocent Americans who would tell the truth about it. The Democrat Party is flat out evil, and yesterday they tried to murder President Trump." That's what Marjorie Taylor Greene said. Democrats tried to murder Donald Trump, according to the Georgia congresswoman and high-powered semi-automatic weapon enthusiast. Congressman Mike Collins, who proudly also used an AR-style rifle to blow up a mock voting machine from about 100 yards in a campaign ad of his after claiming that Georgia's machines had been used to steal the election from Donald Trump in 2020, he alleged President Biden was behind the shooting on Saturday, and then he called for Biden to be arrested for the attempted assassination of Donald Trump. Senator Tom Cotton, Republican of Arkansas, condemned political violence in an appearance on CBS, oh, that's good, saying that Americans should settle, quote, "differences through political debates and through elections. We don't settle them through violence." Well, that's good. But that's the same Senator Cotton who earlier this year called for American citizens to use physical force against peaceful pro-Palestinian protesters, telling Americans who opposed those protests that they should, quote, "take matters into their own hands," unquote, including, quote, "confronting some protesters by," quote, "having their skin ripped off." But now Tom Cotton says we should settle our differences through political debates and elections. Congressman Steve Scalise, the House Majority Leader, he blamed Donald Trump's political critics for the shooting during an interview on Fox News, saying that there is, quote, "hypercharged rhetoric on the left." On the left. And that the left and the mainstream media have levied, quote, "an all-out assault on Donald Trump for years now." An all-out assault. Texas's Republican Governor Greg Abbott, even as millions of his constituents were still without power in sweltering heat and humidity after Hurricane Beryl over the weekend, he found time to tweet, quote, "They tried to jail him. They tried to kill him. It will not work," he said. Who are they? Senator J.D. Vance, the Republican of Ohio, and now the Donald Trump's vice presidential nominee, he charged that it was the Biden campaign's rhetoric that led to what happened on Saturday. He pointed out, I guess, that Project 2025 and its plans to institute autocracy by firing some 50,000 career employees at federal agencies and replacing them all with Trump loyalists and toadies like J.D. Vance, and give complete direct control to Donald Trump over all of those federal agencies. Pointing out stuff like that, I guess, and that Republicans, for example, hope to ban abortion in all 50 states, somehow that is the rhetoric that is responsible for the attempt on Donald Trump's life, according to the ambitious Ohio senator. As TPM's Josh Marshall correctly advised over the weekend, political violence and especially electoral violence strike at the heart of the open, free, and democratic choice-making upon which our civic democratic system and the legitimacy of his choices are based. We must condemn it in every instance, as well as expressing our personal sympathy for its victims. But, he writes, that is not a license to squelch political speech, or in this case, threaten or intimidate those calling attention to the real and profound dangers of Donald Trump returning to the White House. Trump, he notes, has already tried once to overthrow the Republic in response to losing an election. He explicitly promises to wrench our democratic institutions into a perverted system of populist authoritarianism and wreck the structure of global alliances, which have kept generations of Americans safe. We honor our democracy, he says, by continuing to participate in it peacefully and vigorously and not being cowed by those who try to leverage or exploit political violence for malign purposes. The anger of many Trump supporters is understandable and human, he notes, but the moment that it passes into efforts to chill or silence temperate and accurate discussions of what a second Trump presidency portends, well, we must reject them immediately, totally, and categorically. And so we do. We will not be cowed. You should not be cowed. Do not be chilled from participating in vigorous and peaceful free speech in advance of the most important election this country has faced in our lifetimes and perhaps ever. Don't be cowed into thinking you're not allowed to point out that Donald Trump actually has a 900-page manifesto called Project 2025 that details his plans for an authoritarian United States, a fascistic United States. Read the plan, project2025.org. To that end, let's take a quick break here. We'll come back with some of your political speech, if you like, at 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK, on the events of the weekend, the legal events of Monday morning in Eileen Cannon's corrupt court in Florida, or even the official nomination of Donald Trump at the RNC just 2 days after the attempt on his life and on his naming former Trump opponent turned toady, Ohio's U.S. Senator J.D. Vance as his running mate. We will turn things over to you right after this quick break. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to The Bradcast.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At The Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
But I told you.
Strange days indeed.
I told you we'd have some strange days indeed. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Our phone number is 818-985-KPFK, 818-985-5735 if you'd like to ring in on, well, where we are now, where we are going from here. By the way, one of the things we didn't even talk about was where Joe Biden goes from here. We spent last week, and I had noted several times on the show last week that when we opened the phones to callers on that and whether whether Joe Biden should stay or should go as the Democrats' nominee, I was surprised by how many called in to say, yes, he should absolutely stay. He should absolutely be the nominee. Some of you were downright furious about it, which actually caught me by surprise. I was surprised. Do you still feel that way now? 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. Let me go to John in Glendale. John, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
How's it going today?
Oh, fantastic. How about for you?
Not too bad.
Okay, good.
I'm also weighing, you brought up a lot of good points. I'm weighing the consequences of everything. I mean, we're standing at this precipice right now where we have this choice between authoritarianism and on the other side we have equality and liberty for all. And it's just, it is so scary, especially from my point of view. I am that from the area of the shooter. I lived there in Pennsylvania all my life. Mm. My father's side of the family are all Republicans, all hunters, all go to the gun range.
Yeah.
My mom's side is Democrats. But, you know, it's just, it's so interesting to hear people, because now that we all know that he was a Republican, everybody's trying to backtrack and figure out, well, he donated to a progressive cause one time. And I'm sitting there going, but when he had the choice to register to vote, he registered as a Republican.
Republican.
And that needs to be said.
Yep.
And it is so annoying that the cognitive dissonance that we need to do to believe the BS coming out of the right right now.
Yeah.
And just like this march towards authoritarianism and the corporate hold that America, I think one thing we don't talk about enough about is the fact that our Congress is full of millionaires. Mm-hmm. We hardly have the working class Congresses that we used to have.
Mm-hmm.
They used to talk about these things across the aisle. Everyone wants to become a millionaire on the stock market, and it's obvious that they all found out how. And it's sad because all of us Americans are losing. I don't care if you're on the right or the left. If you are a working class or a poor American and you're looking at the Congress right now and you hate them, it's because they're all doing what they shouldn't do. And that's, it's so disheartening because they weren't supposed to be honorable people. They were supposed to be the best of us. At least that's what the founders had said. We're only going to elect good people to office. And that's why so many people were cut out from the vote in the beginning. And we worked so hard to get people to vote and just to watch it all. Watch us walk away from it when there's so much promise.
I say we don't. I say we don't walk away from it, John. I say we stand and we fight peacefully by casting our vote and by making many of the points that you've made. I think a lot of people are looking at this situation and saying, "Oh, well, that's it. That's over." No, the American
Never
people get to stay here. They get a say, and that say has not happened yet. And so, it's depressing, it's grim, it's dark. Let's keep fighting. Let's keep up the good fight.
I'm 100% with you. This whole, I got to move to another country because America's too much, I'm staying.
Yeah, good.
I'm going to make it a better country for the rest of us, okay?
Thank you.
I don't like that rhetoric at all. I got daughters, I got young children, and there's no way I'm going to let this idea of, the party of gun rights and the AR-15. There are multiple Republicans who have political ads where they shoot targets of Democrats with their AR-15 standing proudly, and they're the party that's looking back at Democrats calling them violent right now. And to me, it's just, it's unconscionable. And the fact that we allow the news to even, put this stuff out is unbelievable.
They
talk about the liberal media. All major media corporations are owned by Republican donors. But, yeah, sure, the media is liberal.
The media is the problem. Thanks.
I'm so over it by this point in time. Thanks for letting me speak. You have a great day.
No, I really appreciate the call. You're very good, John. Thank you. Please stay in touch. 818-985-KPFK. Let me go to Jeff in Santa Barbara. Where's all the ladies? Yes, last week we had nothing but dudes as well. Any ladies out there listening? Let me go to, Jeff in Santa Barbara. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you. I'm glad to be there and appreciate what you do.
Thank you, sir.
I concur with several of the things that John, I guess it was just before you got me on, especially his comment about the media, this myth of the liberal media.
Yeah.
I called a few weeks ago and mentioned something, and I'd like to sort of start with that about the picture of this strategy of the right to overtake the government, to do this slow revolution that's been referred to, that would be bloodless if the left allows it to be.
Yeah, and they didn't say slow revolution. By the way, they said second revolution. But
the
Democrats, the
term has been used as well. Yeah, I think that. It was first used by RBG. But
well, it was anyway. That, the second revolution. There's a reference to Project 2025 and what's in there, and the it was I think the head of that group putting that together for Donald Trump, who said it'll be bloodless if the left allows it to be. So yes,
yeah, continue. That's right. Yeah, I'm aware of that. Yep. Yeah, sure. But what I want to say is put in a larger picture. In the 60s, then we had the Powell Memorandum of a strategy of changing the politics in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been implemented very successfully, that whole plan.
Yep.
Prior to that, there were one or two right-wing think tanks. Now there are, you know, I don't know, 50 or more. And there's been a change in the educational systems and all of that.
Yep.
And so we had a plan, Eastman's plan, to do the phony electors,
right,
to overdo the government, overthrow the
right.
election.
Yep.
But I'd like to just mention that the Mercer family was backing Cruz, and they and Conway as his, mm-hmm. His precursors. But when they decided that he didn't have a chance, then they switched to Trump.
Right.
And Bannon from the very first talked about the fourth turning. The book he talked about changing the government, changing everything, and returning to.
Yeah.
The better days,
and they have been successful, Jeff. And I got to move on because I'm coming to the top of the hour here, and I want to try to get in a few more calls. But yeah, they have been successful. I mean, as John mentioned in the previous call, all the money that is now flowing into our elections. You know, they were supposed to be the best and the brightest, but now they're whoever gets the most money from the biggest corporation, thanks to Citizens United, thanks to the Powell memo, which asked for exactly all of this. I don't know how. What are we now, about 40-something, 50 years ago, putting all of this in place. These guys think long-term. Folks on the
That's
left,
right.
folks on the left I, do I, not do that. Folks on the left start eating their own as soon as they're angry about one position or another.
Yeah, and they tend to act ad hoc against a certain thing that's happening right now. But I'd like to just add a couple more points.
I'll give you 30 seconds. I'm sorry. I got to get out.
All right. Well, we all know about the switch that many of the Republicans made from being critical of Trump to being fawning.
Yep.
And I just like to comment that people change their mind like that for usually two reasons, either or both, and that's greed or fear. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's not unlikely that these people have been promised nice positions, or maybe have already been paid to be members of the new regime.
All right.
And I think that's needs to be reflected upon.
Yep.
And I think that we need to support Biden and let people know what he's accomplished.
All right.
Turberville just
thank you.
Tried
I got,
to take
I,
credit.
I know. For, I got to get out. I'm sorry, Jeff. Otherwise, I'm not going to get to any other callers. I appreciate the call. I'm with you, and I greatly appreciate it. 818-985-KPFK. Let me go very quickly. Do I have time? Yes. Randy in Huntington Beach. Hey, Randy. Welcome to the broadcast. Oh, Randy. There we go. Now we got you, Randy. Go ahead.
Cool. The only way to get out of this is to go through. We need to organize, make phone calls, distribute literature, and talk with our neighbors. Trump lost the first election by 3 million votes, but became president by coming in second.
Mm-hmm.
He lost 2020 by 7 million votes, and if we get busy, we can help him lose the next one by 10 to 15 million.
Mm-hmm.
Trump has never had the support of majority of Americans. He's always run below 50%. Hardcore Trump supporters are like 25-30%. There are many, many, many more good people in America who are persuadable and do not like the orange menace. We need to focus on that and
yep.
make sure that we all get out and organize and vote, and we can put them in our rearview mirror.
Thank you, thank you, Randy. Good rant. Greatly appreciated. Let me go to Larry in San Pedro. Hey, Larry. Welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Hey, Brad, 3 points. Number one, how many people are listening to your program right now? Number two, Tom Hartman says that the shooter was just another school shooter and that then Trump decided to come to town, so he saw that as a better opportunity. Mm. I thought that was a good observation.
Mm-hmm.
And last but not least, do you think that Mr. Biden will begin to initiate to expand the Supreme Court?
Boy,
I'll take
do
my call off the air. Thank you, Brad.
Thank you, Larry. I appreciate that. Boy, do I hope he does. And of all the disappointments that I've had in Joe Biden during his presidency, and let me underscore first that he has been easily the most effective president of my lifetime, and probably going back at least to LBJ, more likely back to FDR. He has been the most progressive president of my lifetime. Yet there are a number of things, a number of problems that I have with his presidency, among them the fact that he's, well, you know, he's so much of an institutionalist, he thinks that, oh, we'll get through this Supreme Court thing. We'll have a Blue Ribbon Commission look at it, and basically the Blue Ribbon Commission looked at it and said, yeah, we don't need to do anything about it. Boy, do I hope that Joe Biden starts talking about the Supreme Court and about expanding the court, not packing the court, unpacking the court, unpacking the corrupt, activist, right-wing, radical Supreme Court, which is anything but conservative. When it makes things up that are not in the Constitution, when it comes out with this notion that presidents are somehow above the law, find it for me in the Constitution, will ya? 'Cause it ain't there. And those folks sitting on that Supreme Court, those corrupt, that corrupt bunch of six, they know that it's not there. They know there is nothing in our Constitution that says a president is immune. They know that, in fact, our Constitution was written against that idea. They knew what immunity was. They gave some limited immunity to members of Congress in the speech and debate clause. Governors at the time in various states did have immunity as the executive officers. Our founders of the United States Constitution chose to do otherwise. It's not there. And yet, this corrupted Supreme Court has been making up one ruling after another because they are activists. They are the very thing that they pretend they're trying to keep off the court. So, yeah, I do hope Joe Biden talks about expanding the Supreme Court and correcting this nonsense that has got to end. There's a lot of nonsense that's got to end, but right now what has to end is the broadcast for today. My thanks to all of you folks out there, all of the callers, including those of you who I didn't get to. Sorry about that. Thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, to our board operator, Wendell Handy, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with me. If you missed any portion of today's show, download it for free anytime at bradblog.com. Drop me email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com, and on the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter, I am The Brad Blog. We will see you there. Till we see you here next time, hopefully tomorrow, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.